What's up, everybody? Colin from sportscardradio.com here with my brother again from another edition here at the top of the Palms Place Casino. I'll be honest with you, I'm more than a few drinks in tonight, so definitely more than last night, I'll be honest. So we'll see how this show goes. We'll see how long I can hang on until I need a couple more, until we need to go out and get a few more, Ryan. So how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm also a couple drinks in, so we'll see what happens. But we got some exciting, interesting things that happened today. I know you sat in on a roundtable solution session that included one of the top dogs from Upper Deck kind of discussing redemption cards. So maybe we'll get into that.
We'll definitely get into that. That was probably the main crux of what I went to today. There was another presentation about MSRP prices. I forget what they call it, what their little short term was for it. But there was a whole thing today by Panini about how they're going to limit hobby shops, not really hobby shops, but online selling of their product within a given release date. And did you read their full post on their blog there?
Yeah, I did. I'd probably, if we go to a break on this, I could even pull it up. And I know they discussed some things where they were going to have MAP pricing, or they call it MAPP.
Minimum something, I don't know.
Something.
Basically, they need, if a box comes out and they put a minimum price of $60, if you advertise it at $50 within a given time frame, they're going to revoke your ability to sell their product.
Direct, this is buying it direct
right,
from them.
Right.
I mean, if you are able to come up on a case somehow through your own methods and means, You can sell the cards for whatever you
right,
want.
Right, but then they will probably, if wholesale distributors and they were all, well, if you are a fan of our wholesale list page, that is going to get quite a bit longer. I've met a few this week as well. But they are almost all that I can think of, and then a few more are at this conference. They're going to adhere to these things as well. So if you're getting your cases somehow cheaper than that, you're probably not doing it legally, I guess. So it's all to control prices a little bit. There was a lot of talk on margin. I think we talked about that on the previous podcast. But instead of, I think most people might at this point be familiar with what happened. And even as a normal collector, you might not even be that interested in it. But to kind of explain, maybe to give some backstory, a lot of people think this is a bad thing. It basically means higher prices in some cases, and it also means less selection. It means maybe not going to blow out cards in DA Card World in order to get your cards within the first week or two or whatever of the release. So that's not always a bad thing. I think a lot of people just look at that. I think if I wasn't at this conference, I think I'd have a totally different perspective on what these people, what the whole goal of was behind what Panini did today. But listening to what these people have to say, listening to some of the pain and some of their voices, and also some of the successes some of them had, I think that these people do provide some decent service to the hobby. And also what people need to understand, I don't think people think that if you own a hobby store and you have good business and you're ordering 10 cases of National Treasures or Topps Finest Baseball, why don't you just sell it online? But what I don't think people realize is how difficult that is. And I'm sitting here and I know this from experience. We owned a card store at that time. Honestly, my brother didn't really know anything about our website, how to use it, how to upload anything. He didn't really know what was even on the website. So, and this is someone that's very talented at the web today. We're only talking about 4 or 5 years ago. But at the time, if something sold in our store, I would have had to sold it in order to know to then go to the website to take it off, because I was the only one listing things on the website at the time. And we have husbands and wives here, husbands and wives with daughters and sons that work at the store, or men that have employees, 16, 21-year-olds, 30-year-olds, whoever they hire to work in these stores. So not only would they have to have them hired to work in the store, but then they would have to train them to take that product off the website. So people think that these hobby store owners are lazy, or they don't know how to compete with Blowout, or they can't set up a website, or they don't even have thought of that. Trust me, I've been in a room with all 100. There's 136 of them, and that's a record for this conference, and it goes back to, I think, 91 or 1992. It's been a long time. 136 retail stores. It used to be held in Hawaii, apparently. This is the most that's ever been there. Trust me, these people are not dumb. Many of them are smarter than I am, and I have a lot of self-confidence in my abilities. Many of these people are smarter than me, and smarter than my brother. And my brother has graduated from a very prestigious university. And I consider them all very talented people. They all had great ideas. So to say these people can't compete with Blowout, or they're too lazy, or they don't even know how, is totally not the truth. It's very difficult, and I know this from experience. It's very difficult, especially if you're not the only one there at the shop every day. It's extremely difficult to have an inventory of product, especially single cards, but also boxes. If it sells in the store or sells online, it needs to be immediately taken off the shelves. And that's very hard to coordinate if you're not sitting there all the time.
Well, and here's the thing, too. What sells in your retail store, from our experience, and I think maybe some of the people who do sell online and also have a hobby store, what sells in your hobby store and what sells on eBay or a popular website or anything is completely different. Like, you know, sometimes, a lot of times the only times we ever made money selling boxes on eBay wasn't really with new product. It was with older product that people had forgotten about, or that we were able to get a really good price on by some wholesaler. It wasn't the brand new stuff coming out, because everybody has that. Everybody has access to that stuff. And you've got, internet retailers that are willing to make a dollar or two a box, because maybe they have other streams of revenue that are coming in, or maybe they have so much volume on the internet that they can sell, 1,000 boxes a day and make $1 to $2
each. At a 3% margin, that's basically what people that sell stocks for. It's not, they charge $9.99 a trade. There is some cost there. It's at a very low margin, so a lot of business, car dealerships as run at a very low margin. Walmart is run at a razor thin margin.
Well, I know what the margin target runs at. It runs at about 3.5%. So every $100 cart of groceries, Target, the company, makes $3.51. Like, literally, that's the profit they make when you bring up a $100 cart of groceries. They make $3.51. And why do you think there are not any more mom and pop grocery shops and not too many liquor stores, and all you see is 7-Elevens and Targets and Walmarts, and that's all you see? And we live out in California. That's all we see. Maybe in rural areas or different areas, there's a different sort of thing. But A, retail rent's expensive. B, employees are expensive, especially in California, where they got to make eight plus an hour, just minimum wage wise, plus your insurance and all that other jive. So, just to have a retail establishment, a physical location, your margins have just shrank exponentially. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, why don't we just move this all to the internet, and who cares about hobby shops? There's a lot of endangered animals out there that I don't care about, but that doesn't mean they deserve to be extinct. And that doesn't mean they don't deserve to have an opportunity. And the same things with these businesses. Just because you don't shop in a local hobby shop, we don't have a hobby shop within an hour and a half from us, doesn't mean there shouldn't be an opportunity for people to have a hobby shop and start a new business, or continue and prosper the one they already have.
Right, and I think we can all agree that sports cards have declined in popularity. It's declined in growth.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, what has declined with it? Hobby shops. At the height of the popularity of sports cards, there were lots more hobby shops. It was probably the peak of the number of hobby shops. And it's probably not a coincidence. There's an atmosphere in a hobby shop, getting to know the owner, getting to know other collectors, meeting people face-to-face, being able to hold the cards in your hand, being able to make spur-of-the-moment purchases, being able to establish relationships. That doesn't happen when you put add something in your cart at an online store. It doesn't matter if it's Amazon.com or eBay or Blowout Cards.
I can't even blow. Every time I try
even
to,
our sponsors, BaseballFactorySets.com.
Every time I try to order on Blowout Cards, I can't order. I got all the money in PayPal. My address is mad. Every time it says, oh, something's wrong with PayPal. So what the hell's up with that? Every time I go into LCS, they'll accept my cash. They'll accept my Visa card that's got money on it. So, I mean,
a lot of people worked on credit. I know we sold lots of packs and lots of boxes.
Where oh, absolutely! It was like,
come back next
absolutely.
Week and pay me. I don't care.
Absolutely.
You know, we sold lots of things on lots of product moved out the door that people didn't pay for that day. And I would say our recovery of all those funds was probably 100%, because I wouldn't do it with everybody. Obviously, there was a few people that would come in the door and just take things right out of the door without asking. That was a big reason why we closed. But there was a lot of people we made close personal relationships with, and if they were short on funds, they had kids. We understand when bills are due and rent is due, but you want the newest product and you want the experience opening that. You can walk out a hobby shop door without paying for things. If you go in there on a weekly, monthly, daily, especially a daily basis, and just chit-chat it with the owner, you can walk out the hobby shop without paying for things and come back and pay it without interest later. And those are a big reason why hobby shops and why cards in general got popular in the early 90s and the late 80s and even maybe slightly before that and after that was because you can go, not just because you can go in there and buy on credit with no interest, but you gained relationships. Going to a store and talking to someone face-to-face, although you might save a lot more money online and it might be a lot less headaches, it might not be the best thing for growth of the hobby and to improve, maybe bring more collectors back. And what a lot of people talked about today was everybody's collected in their lives. And I get tons of, I know I've said this on the show a lot, I get tons of emails about, hey, I used to collect when I was 16, 17, 18 years old or whatever it was, and now I'm 32, and I have a son that's 4 years old, and he's getting into baseball or whatever it is, and we're collecting together. That's a common story with everybody. Hopefully that keeps happening, and I think the more card stores that are out there, and if there were the same number of card stores today, if they could have 50-100% markup as Dillard's and Macy's get to have, and four dealerships, not necessarily four dealerships, but especially traditional retail, even food, pizza places are 300% markup. If hobby stores were more around, I think the hobby would be more popular. Doesn't matter if you can't get it online cheaper. If hobby stores were the place to get product, I think cards would be slightly more popular than they are today.
I think so, and I think, this was just something Panini brought forth. This is not every single product that's going to come out. There's going to be a 7-day window where you're only going to be able to buy it at a hobby shop.
Right. The world's not coming to an end.
and your price, you're not going to be paying double for boxes. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
The price isn't going to go up.
At all. I don't think the price is really going to go up at all. But I think they just want to be able to set a baseline for, okay, here's the cost direct. You shouldn't have one person or one segment of the market on the internet being able to mark up these boxes $1 to $2 a box. And just because they're able to sell volume, it literally will crush everybody. And look at what happens when a big super Walmart comes into town. There are protests left and right.
Right.
I mean, I know the city we lived in several years ago, there were people protesting every day. Don't bring this Walmart in here. It's going to kill all the small businesses.
Well, it's still not there. There are still towns in California and probably across the especially out on the West Coast, that they hate Walmart. They hate super Walmarts. They hate big business. Not to compare online retailers in this space to Walmarts, because nobody makes that kind of money. But in our space, yes, the Blowout Cards and the DA Card Worlds are the Walmarts of the world. That's not necessarily the best thing for everybody. Whether or not prices go up, If prices go up on boxes, usually that means, and more people are collecting them, that usually means single cards are going to sell for more. And the cards you pull out of them are going to be worth more. And the more cards that these companies sell, the more time and money they can invest in the products, the better signatures and jersey cards and whatever, and maybe less, perfect segue, maybe they'll have less redemptions in these products. And that's kind of what we went over today. I had the really nice opportunity to meet with, not really meet, but there was like about 30 of us in the, maybe more than that, meeting with Chris Carlin from Upper Deck. And I believe there was a gentleman named Jeff, and I believe his last name was DeGraw. I'll try to have to get a correction on that if I'm mistaken. But he owns a card store himself. And they were both kind of leading this, you know, kind of this industry meet on redemption cards. And there was lots of interesting things that kind of came up about redemption cards. And I know that we've talked about on the podcast about expired redemptions and how that's frustrating. And then we have on our post, if you've been listening to the podcast and visiting our forum, we had collectors that pulled Joe Montana and Derek Jeter expired redemptions out of Masterpiece Football and Baseball, respectively, and the there's a mystery. It's up in the air whether they get them back, and so that's kind of frustrating for collectors. So we kind of talked about that, and basically, I'm going to focus on the good first. We'll focus on some of the positive of redemptions and some of the things that make sense, why redemptions sometimes make sense. Redemptions sometimes make sense. This is straight from Upper Deck, that it helps products come out on time. So if you have a problem with SB Authentic Football coming out in February instead of December, how it used to come out for, I don't know, the last decade or close to that, then you probably want redemptions. The more redemptions there are in a product, the closer it will come out to release date. Because from Upper Deck, they are, you know, redemptions are being put into product up to the day of packing out, because they don't know sometimes up to the day of packing out whether or not they're going to get signatures back. And they're working on it literally up to the hour of packing it up and shipping it out to these wholesalers and retailer stores around the country. So that's a positive. Another positive is two player examples. And this is directly from Upper Deck. Patrick Roy, hockey player, goalie, he likes to sign apparently all at once, maybe once or twice a year at most. He does not want to get boxes of the Cup and then SB Authentic and then whatever, you know, all the different brands. He wants to get all of it at once. So if you're a fan of his, or if you want his autographs in products, you either need, if you don't want redemptions, he's only going to be a once a year, twice a year person.
So it's either he signs for one or two products, because they have to have the cards ready to go on card, or they're going to have to be stickers.
Right, because they can't design all the cards for a set. Even, yeah, you can design the Patrick Roy 2013 card now, but it's not necessarily what's going to work for all the other cards in the set, the base set, the insert set, whatever set you're designing at the time. It might not work. So you can't do it. So if you want him in the set, you have to have redemption. So that's a positive.
And that's just not one example. I would say good many of athletes are just like him. They want to do it all at one time, either a book of stickers or all the cards at one time. Don't come back. Don't bother me in the middle of the season.
Right.
And with how many products that come back, imagine how many times you'd have to hit a guy up during the season to get, oh, here's Prestige, here's National Treasures, here's Leaf Rookies and Stars.
If any of you want to volunteer, every 2 months I'll send you a box of index cards, 500 of them. And you've got to sign them all, maybe even more than that, because it would probably be more than that for every product. I'll do it once a month. I'll send you 500 index cards or 1,000 index cards, and you've got to sign them all and then send them back to me. And by the 8th, 9th, 12th month, even for somebody that doesn't sign autographs and how flattering that might be for the average Joe, you are going to be completely annoyed by me sending you this box of index cards. Now, I can imagine there's not to get on Patrick Roy and think that's a negative. I bet there's guys that are like totally the opposite. They actually only want to sign 50 or 20 at a time, but they don't mind doing it once a week, twice a week, because that would be my preference.
And those are the guys that need money. See, here's the thing too. 90% of the athletes that they get to sign for these products, they don't need the money. They don't care about getting what Patrick Roy probably gets quite a bit for his signature. I mean, I guess would be 70. I don't want to guess, but it's a lot more than say a fifth round NFL draft pick that gets $1 or $2 per card. But that's the guy that needs money, so he's geeked to get a stack of cards and sign him because that's when his check comes in. Whereas somebody like Joe Montana, Ken Griffey Jr., Michael Jordan, I mean, these guys, they don't need the money. They don't need the money. So why do they want to be burdened by having to sign all these card sets at all at one time that come out with different types? So I think some of the things that you learned today and what Chris Carlin was able to kind of give insight into, kind of with dealing with some of these athletes, is that A, redemption cards, while they may be annoying, they are necessary. Now, when they expire, that's a whole nother situation.
Right. And we'll talk about that in a second.
And I know there's a lot of complaint about on cards and stickers, but if you want autographs in your products, you're gonna need some redemptions and you're gonna need a whole bunch of stickers. Period. There's no way around that. Unless there are people out there that want to personally volunteer these times and drive around the country hounding these athletes to get them to sign cards. Imagine how much that would cost. You're trying to track down these athletes day in and day out or contact their agent or get them to sign you somewhere. It'd be a pain in the butt.
Right. And the Upper Deck had another gentleman there, a real nice guy, that actually explained the process sometimes of how painstaking it is to get these guys signed. He said a lot of the times you have to go to the girlfriend or usually the mother and sweet talk them to then call the son. And, you know, if your mom, everybody knows, everybody out there, it doesn't matter how old you are, if your mom calls you on the phone and asks you to do something, doesn't matter what it is, because chances are you owe your mom big time. And a lot of us owe our mom big time. A lot of us owe our dads big time. So it doesn't matter. One of them calls you on the phone and says, come over here and sign these stickers because I have a really nice guy literally sitting at my kitchen table hoping to have you sign these. You're going to get in your luxury SUV and get your butt over there. And so that was a lot of the things we talk about. But now let's get to some of the things, a couple of ideas actually that I thought were really intelligent. These were ideas, I think a lot of people think, again, I think the perception, especially on Twitter from bloggers out there, they think hobby stores are lazy. They think they just sit in their shop and watch ESPN and they don't know anything about, they don't even know who DA Cardwell is or, you know, baseballfactorysets.com. They don't know who these people are. That's not the truth. These people have some good ideas. They had some good ideas on expired redemptions. One of the things was there was actually multiple people that took things from customers. They took redemptions from customers. It didn't matter if it was an expired redemption or a current redemption. If you pulled it from their shop, they would. One guy exchanged it back at value. So whatever card you pulled, if it was a Joe Montana autograph and you didn't want to wait, or if it was Hakeem to beat autograph and you didn't care about even redeeming it, you could then take the value of that card and exchange it for a box or a single card, anything in his store. And he had a what are those things, like a little plastic case of probably over 50 to 100 redemptions just this month, or just last month in February, that he had taken from collectors. So it obviously worked. He says he doesn't want anybody walking out of his shop unsatisfied. That's customer service, right? That's the kind of customer service when I'm getting here, when I'm walking up to the front of the Palms place, guys are opening the door for me and asking me what they can do for me. If I go to a hobby shop and I pull like a bunch of Boo redemptions and he's willing to exchange them for basically face value,
wow.
Because Beckett, as we know, everybody that listens to this podcast is educated enough to know that they overprice everything.
On their high price.
Right.
Their
high book price. Right. Right. There's a low and a high, but most collectors really just take it at the high value and they think that's what it sells for. Especially if you've owned a hobby shop as we have, you know, that's all they look at.
And
nobody ever looks at the low price.
And that's something Beckett should do more informing of in their magazine, that there's a low and a high price.
Right. And I think It's okay that I think that Beckett does what I think that Beckett has done what it can to get off topic a little bit. I think they've done what they can to educate it, but it's kind of like if you were selling stocks, there's actually a bid and an ask price. You always see like the last price paid, but if you're trying to go in there and sell, depending on the price of the stock, it's usually maybe quite a bit less. It's several cents less, and if you're selling thousands of shares, that's a lot of money. There's always kind of a discrepancy there, but everybody always looks at the highest price. Nobody ever looks at the lowest price to sell something. But that's the kind of get off topic. Back onto redemptions. I thought a lot of people had some really good ideas. Upper Deck, I know I've brought this up in the past. I've said, hey, they should have a list of choices. They should shoot you a list of choices. If you got whatever autograph and it's, you know, they want to offer you instead of giving you just some card that you, even Upper Deck said that, hey, it's tough for them to even know what you like. They could send you something that they think is so tight. They even said that they sent unopened product. They said they sent SP Authentic football boxes to people, and then they open them up and say, hey, I didn't get anything out of that box. Send me something else. So obviously collectors are extremely fickle and they're extremely picky, which is fine. Mercedes-Benz owners and Ferrari people that buy Ferraris, when I'm buying golf clubs, I'm not going to buy something at Walmart. I'm not going to buy Dunlop clubs. I'm going to buy Titleist and Ping and Callaway. So I can understand the kind of discretion that is there, but it's tough for the manufacturer to know what kind of discretion level you're working with. So I thought that was interesting, but to get on my point of list of choices, Upper Deck said that was hard to implement, and I kind of thought about it, and I kind of thought, yeah, if you have maybe, as they could have maybe in the five figures, we're talking 30, 50,000 maybe redemptions that need to be redeemed, and then setting up a website, there's no template for that, so you'd have to set up a custom script where you could input the list of choices that a user would see, and then say you had 12 boxes of SP Authentic that you were willing to give away. Once that 12th one got picked, it needs to be removed. And everybody else that's logging in to check to see what they can see, they can't see that. So I could see that's a tough script to write because you're inputting something from the back end, and then the user on the front end is making a choice, and then that needs to be removed from the back end. And that's an that was complicated to say. I wouldn't even know how to begin to write that kind of code.
And it's also something that would require not only somebody with some computer knowledge and to be able to set all that up and organize that, it would take somebody to manage that. And we know that Upper Deck had to make some tough decisions and lay off, by some accounts, over 100 people lately. Right. So they don't have that. They don't have that capability to manage something like that.
And to finish that point, they even admitted that, hey, if you want, Ryan said a little while ago, if you want all on-card autographs in your product and you want it all like case hits in every box, there's going to be no more sports cards. It's going to be the end of it because Upper Deck admitted that they had to make some tough choices with especially baseball. If they're asking for an X price for a license and you can't sell cards at that price, you know you can't pack out product at that price and sell it to distributors and sell enough quantity, and then on top of that, pay the athletes for these autographs and these jerseys and all the other stuff and the Babe Ruth cuts that need to be in products these days, you're not going to make any money. And as we've seen, if hobby shops don't make any money, they go out of business. If manufacturers don't make any money, they lose their baseball license, they lose their football license, they lose their basketball license. When they stop making money, they go very close to going out of business. Luckily, Upper Deck seemed to make the choices who knows what their financial situation is, but they seem to have made the tough decisions of every company has made, from GM to ING to Apple, Morgan Stanley,
Yahoo,
everybody, Yahoo, even Google has laid workers off. Every company, whether they have the money or not, has laid workers off. And we know Upper Deck wasn't a Google or an Apple, and those companies laid people off.
Right. What else on the redemption ends? I thought there was a good one.
Yes.
Oh, and the extra hits. Talk about it being
extra hits. This was something that wasn't a main topic, but I found interesting. If there's guaranteed four hits a box and there's two redemptions, basically you're going to get six hits. you're going to have four normal hits and then two redemptions. Or if there's four hits per box and you get a redemption, you actually got five hits. You got five hits packed out. Wasn't something, I don't ever see that implemented. I don't see that really working. But if you're, again, a lot of these topics I'm saying might not happen. But if you really, even at the summit, there's not enough people in that room. It's really you, the collector, out there. There's a lot more. There, I said there's 136 retailer stores, and counting me and all the wives and all the, you know, workers that are there, there might be like 200 people there. That's nothing compared to all the collectors out there. If you think that extra hits, if you think that not having redemptions, if you think that having all on-card autographs out there is a good idea, then, and if you push for it hard enough, it's just like your government. We put up with a lot of BS in Washington from the Republicans and the Democrats and the Independents. All three of them are, they all work against each other. But if we all took to the streets, as we've seen in the Middle East, some of these guys that they've overturned and overtaken and that are soon to be overtaken are some of the richest men in the world, are some of the most powerful and richest men in the entire world, and they're getting booted out of the, getting their funds seized by countries, getting all kinds of stuff happening, and the worst is coming for them, and it's because people went to the streets and protested it. So if you want changes in this hobby, yes, the Sports Card Summit helps, but it's just one voice. There's a lot more, trust me, there's way more collectors out there, and if you raise enough stink and you get organized and you kind of organize your thoughts and you present them together. You can't just have one guy present them. You got to all come together and all say the same thing. If you do that, trust me, whatever you guys are trying to have changed, it will change. Trust me. But that's kind of a side point. Just the great ideas, I thought, instant redemption at these hobby stores. That's another thing you can't get. If you buy from Blowout and you get you buy a $100 box and you get two hits and two redemptions, there's nothing that Blowout Cards and DA Card Worlds and Baseball Factory Sets, thank you for sponsoring the site, there's nothing they can there's nothing they can do for you, period. But there were several hobby shops and several others that aren't doing it that I guarantee you that sat in on the meeting I went to that are going to start doing it now. When you pull a redemption and you don't like it, they're going to redeem it for something in their store. Another guy had a whole back set of cards or baseballs or whatever he had laying around the shop that he didn't think would sell in the cabinet or was whatever, just stuff that he just didn't feel like putting a price on or whatever. He would throw it in a box and people would come there and pick out of that. So whatever redemption you had, you could go to that box and pull whatever you wanted to. So you left the store happy. That doesn't happen online. It never will. Something like that you can't even control online, because you could order a box online and pull a Blake Griffin jersey and then go buy a box somewhere else and claim you bought it from Blowout. So that'll never happen. And that's why hobby shops have a stake in this business and are very important to this business, because they can't compete on price. We can all agree on that. But they can compete on service, and they can compete on keeping people in the hobby and bringing new people in, which is exactly what this hobby needs. And I don't think everybody out there with a big sports card collection that you're hoping to go up in value, you want more people in, and you want the people that come in to keep collecting, because yes, everything in your closet, from the base cards to the one-of-one autographs, are all going to go up in value. The more people that come in and the more people that want to collect. It's like Mercedes-Benz cars. It's like Corvettes. It's like 1968 Camaros. The more people that want them, the higher they go up in price. So it's like anything else. The more collectible it is, the more people that want it, the harder it is to find, and the more expensive it is. So we want people to get into this hobby, and we want people to get in to stay in. And hobby stores do that because they don't provide the lowest price, for sure, period, end of conversation. But they provide a level of customer service that is head and shoulder. Yes, you go into hobby shop owner, most people complain on Twitter, oh, they're marking everything up 50 to 100%. Well, that is going to change. We can't do that. People have to understand, these companies have to compete on a customer service level and still be able to compete. Yes, you can go into Walmart and buy underwear for $3, but there's people that will go in Vegas going into the Prada store and buying $500 pair of jeans and $500 boxers or whatever it is because they're willing to pay that. And there's people that are willing to go into a hobby store and pay 50 to 100% more than they can get at blowout sports cards because if they pull a redemption or if something gets messed up, they know that guy at the other side of the counter is too nice of a guy to let them walk out of that store unhappy because they know they'll never turn around and walk back in that door again.
Yeah, and I think those are some very good points. And I also want to touch. I don't think the price is really going to fluctuate all that much. I think there might be a period of time where you're only going to be able to. As Panini is going to try to do with their map pricing, that you're only going to be able to buy from either an authorized. Distributor or hobby shop within the first 7 days of a product being released. And after that 7 days, Panini didn't, at least in the interview that they had on their blog, they didn't give any indication that they were then going to start monitoring price or anything after that. It was really just in those first 7 days that you were gonna have to, possibly go to your local hobby shop to purchase a box of cards, which I don't think is too outside the realm of normal things. And also to discuss kind of to go further on this point about the difference in price between a hobby shop and what you can buy on the internet. Before I came on this trip, I went into Barnes & Noble's and I bought the 2011 Baseball America Handbook, and it cost me like $35. Whereas I knew beforehand, before I paid that $35, that I could have ordered it off Amazon for about $17. But I made that choice that I just wanted to go in there and get it. I didn't want to have to wait 5 days. And I've heard nightmare on Amazon how sometimes it takes a long time for you to get there. I didn't care. I was willing to pay double right there to get that book in my hand. So I had it on the airplane. I had it right there when I wanted to be checking out some prospects. And I don't think that's any different than with sports cards. I might be willing to go into a local hobby shop.
Oh, hell yeah, we would. Because we have contests all the time where if instead of waiting to order it from whatever retailer we decide, I would just go into a hobby store. I don't care if I'm paying $20, $30 more. I want to, when I feel like running a promotion, running a box, busting a box and giving away cards, I want to do it that day. I don't want to wait a week.
Right.
And I know collectors that are keeping the cards themselves, that they probably even have those feelings even more.
And I think you'll always have. I think you'll always have that those price options. And I don't think all of a sudden people who sell exclusively online or mainly online and maybe only have a handful of hobby shops. I don't think they're all of a sudden going to be having to raise their prices 20%. I just don't see that as maybe on newer product. And you actually, if you're a smart sports card collector and you've studied the history of the hobby, you probably shouldn't be buying a whole lot of new product right when it comes out because that's when it's most expensive. You should actually wait till the price tapers off a little bit and the demand kind of cools for it. And you're able to scoop up either some single cards on the secondary market or you're able to pick up a box for a lesser price. Look at prices of 2009, 2010 basketball products. Those tanked for a long, when Griffin got hurt and Evans and Curry out here on the West Coast. Nobody watches West Coast basketball, especially the Warriors and Kings. So last year's basketball product was really cool. You could buy boxes, I think, a Hall of Fame for about $45 for a while. And then, I mean, that's when you want to buy products. But when it first came out, it was hot. They were popping. I want to say some of those 09-10 basketball products dropped by about 50% from when they first initially hit the market. And this was everywhere. This was on the internet. I mean, this was blowout cards were selling these boxes for, $70-$80
when
they first came out.
Weren't making money.
Yeah, and now they all of a sudden have to sell them for $45 because they can't get rid of them.
It's not like they don't buy from – they buy it from Panini. It's not like – trust me, a lot of the things, some of the things you buy from these online, they're losing money on the sale. That's
absolutely.
That's not good for them either.
No.
Just because they make money, they have enough volume to make up for that. GM did the same thing. ING, AIG, lots of companies did the same thing. We saw what happened to them. You just can't run a sustainable business losing money on particular. It's not that you have to make huge amounts of money on every sale, but you need to make a consistent margin because inflation is a fact of life. And inflation, if you don't believe me, if you didn't think, when I told you, when everybody was running out of the stock market, everybody thought the stock market was the worst thing to have your money in. That's when I put all my money in. Well, everybody's not worried about inflation now. Interest rates are low. Inflation is coming, and that's something we need to be aware of and be very keen of. And the same thing happens in life. And so if you're only making a 5% margin, that never goes up, because collectors are always, you know, they're kind of tuned to pay a certain price for a product, and they're willing to just drive around for the cheapest price. Just doesn't always work. When prices start going up, the cost of living going up, eventually we're going to lose all our sports card businesses, we're going to lose the online retailers, we're going to lose the manufacturers, and we're going to lose the whole hobby. So we can't let that happen. Margins have to be intact, not just so people can go play golf and people can come to the Palms place or whatever and people can live a good life. It's because the whole hobby will go away if you can't make money in this business. So, but to close things off, we're kind of getting, I don't want to make these too long, especially when it's just us talking. When we get some interviews and stuff like that, I don't really care too how long they go. But I wanted to add some last points to emphasize the point that you, the collector, have a big decision on how redemption cards happen, to kind of close things up on redemptions. And then I want to get to two businesses that I met personally. And so I'm going to give them free plugs. Didn't even tell them I was going to do this. So I'm going to give them free plugs. And if you're interested in their products, you can get to them. But to give you some choice, these are things that were brought up. And I was thinking to myself, I'm not a big enough collector. And I'm not someone that's in the hobby enough from a collecting standpoint. And even as I don't even sell anymore. So these are things that I guess I don't really have an opinion on, but I know collectors out there do have an opinion on out there. And if you have a big opinion on these kind of things, let the companies know. Send Upper Deck an email. Send Panini. Send Topps an email. Communicate. Even if you think you're sending an email to an empty inbox or making voicemails on a phone call that will never be listened to, still do it, because I think if enough of you do it, this is not a big enough business and a big enough companies to where they don't listen to these kind of things. So I think your ideas will be heard, and I encourage you to get out there on the forums, whatever forum it is, and get out there and express your opinions. I think it's important to do that, especially on redemptions, because it really affects you, the collector. So keeping redemptions is a mystery. I know Upper Deck has done some things with like mystery cut autographs and some other. They mentioned a product where they had mystery dual autographs, where they kind of admitted that they didn't know which ones they were going to get back, and the ones that they got back were going to be the mystery ones. So I didn't know. I know I've heard some really negative things on the mystery redemptions. But the hobby shop owners there seem to imply that they kind of liked mystery redemptions. They kind of liked that it never can be a bad redemption. It never can be a bad card because it's a mystery. But I don't know how you feel as that as a collector, because I could see how that would suck. Maybe even more than if it was Hakeem Tabeet. Not to hate on him, because he might end up having a good career. Probably not. But that's something I couldn't express my opinion on, because I could see the hobby store point, but I know I've heard enough from collectors, whether it be surfing on forums of our own or others, where people hate these mystery redemptions. So I encourage you to get out there, because if you don't voice an opinion, the opinion was these were okay and these were good. And I don't know if there's enough people out there that think these are horrible and don't think they should happen. If you don't think they should happen, you better start voicing your opinion and being loud about it, because these might happen more in the future.
Well, I think another thing with these mystery redemption is, again, what is the timetable to redeem these suckers? So, okay, say you're buying whatever, some kind of cut product or whatever product it is, and you get a mystery redemption and you send it in within its, redeemable time, you know, you're before the expiration date and you send it in, or you fill it out online or whatever. What's the timetable? I mean, the companies themselves don't really know what you know, autographs they're going to be able to get back, whose mother they're going to have to call to get this guy to sign autograph, or, you know, meet Patrick Waugh once time a year to get him to sign a book of stickers, you know, that so on and so forth. So I don't know about how I feel about the mystery thing either. I think that's, again, like you said, for people who actually are opening these products on a regular basis and pulling these redemption cards, I think we'd be, send us an email. Let us know how you would feel if you opened a box. It could be any box, an expensive box, a cheap box, and you got, hey, here's a, congratulations, you just received a mystery autograph of a Major League Baseball player. You know, what would your reaction be? What if it was a two-hit box and that was one of your hits? And so now you had to wait.
And you don't even know what you're waiting for.
Right, and what do you so maybe it could turn out great. Maybe you get, you know, Derek Jeter, or maybe you get Joe Mauer, or somebody great like that, Buster Posey. Fantastic. But then what if you get, you know, Aaron Rowand or Barry Zito or something? Then you're going to be feeling crappy. And now that experience of you opening that box 6 months ago or a year ago or however long it took for them to redeem it, you know, maybe it'll leave kind of a sour taste in you. Maybe you feel like you got burnt a little bit. So I don't know. Let us know how you would feel about that as kind of, instead of it saying, okay, you're going to get a Gary Brown autograph as long as you redeem this before, you know, 2012. What if it was a mystery guy and maybe it could be hit or miss? So maybe, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
And I'm glad you brought up that point. Expired redemptions, I think, I got the feeling, I never got a direct answer. I brought up some points that weren't really directly addressed, I guess I should say, about expired. I think the agreement was something should be done for an expired. You shouldn't just get nothing for it. There were some other ideas where you can take expired redemptions into authorized retail stores and get something. That was another way to add value to a retail store, and another reason why we should have them around there, because there's no way blowout cards or anyone else is probably going to give you anything for an expired redemption. Mm-hmm. So it could add value. The Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, whoever got involved in the program would then either give a kickback to their distributor order or to that hobby store for exchanging those expired redemptions for things. But I guess I never got a Upper Deck. Actually, Chris Carlin made a comment where he said, you know, it's not really our job to care about product that's, you know, 5 or 6 years old. And then I made a comment where if GM said we're not going to service vehicles or fix vehicles from 1997 and previous, can you imagine anybody ever buying a GM car ever again? Hell no. Nobody buys, it's hard to buy a Saturn now. It's Hummer, I don't even know if is a brand anymore. But and Pontiac, I don't know if, but there, I know for sure Saturn is done away with. So buying a Saturn on the used market, yes, there's people that affix those cars. But how comfortable do you feel about, I see a lot less Saturns now these days, because you just don't feel comfortable with owning a car that the company doesn't back up anymore. Yes, I can buy a GM from 1960, I can buy a 1968 Corvette for whatever price, but I know that I can get OEM parts all day of the week for whatever price I want to pay for this car, and I know I can drive it into any Chevrolet deal. It doesn't have to be, I could be any Chevrolet that they've ever made. They're going to service that car, and they're going to make sure they get me back on the road. And the fact that Upper Deck said that they didn't care, I don't know if he really meant it, but he's basically said that they don't care about selling product that's 4 or 5 years. Their goal is to sell product now because they're the manufacturer. They got to get it out. They don't have anything. They don't have anything on their shelf from 1997. But I guarantee you, a lot of these. I don't know why anybody that owned a hobby store and that had product on their shelf that Upper Deck promises not to honor anymore didn't bring up more of a stink about that. But I found that completely. That's completely the wrong idea, to not care about any product. There, like Nordstrom, I know you can buy something, rip the tag off it, wear it to the prom, spill a glass of wine on it and puke on it, and you could take it back to the store and exchange it for the full price you paid for it without a receipt. I don't know if that's still their policy, but it used to be no receipt, no tag on the item, any condition, they'll take it back. And there's plenty of Nordstroms out there, and I think they're making pretty good money. It's because they back up their products, and giving that kind of backing on your product helps things out. So if any of you companies listening out there, and I can imagine a couple of you are, Back up your products. It doesn't matter if it was made in 1992. Doesn't matter if you were even the original owners of that product. If you bought that company, back up that product, because if GM stopped servicing Impalas or Corvettes, or I'm sure they still service Saturns and Hummers and all those cars that they sold or spun off, they're still going to service those cars. They're still going to fix them for you because they know that you're not going to buy a 2011 or a 2014 or a 2020 if you got burned on one back in 2011. So you got a point, Ryan?
No, I think I plug these car shops and let's go. Okay. We'll come back tomorrow maybe.
Yes. This is one you can go to directly. This is for you, the hobby collector out there. Orange County Sports Cars, really nice guy. I believe his name's Lance Kirkland. OCSportsCards.com. 714-761-6414. They're on 1238 South Beach Boulevard, Suite J in Anaheim, California. This sounds like a good place. So check them out. We'll probably have something more from them in the future. We'll probably team up with them somehow, hopefully. Another one is actually a distributor. And they actually, if you own a hobby store or if you're thinking about it, you got to carry more than just cards, I think. As we've talked about on this show, all this talk about margins and stuff like that, I think they're still going to be razor thin. There's no way you're going to take margins from 10 to 5% to 100%. The collector can't do that. You can't take a GM Camaro that I think sells at $28,000 to $30,000. They can't make the 2013 priced at $60,000. It's just not going to happen. Sure, 30, 40 years from now, when the dollar's worth less, the Corvette and the Camaro is going to be a lot more expensive than it is today. But you can't do it in a year. You can't raise prices, can't raise margins that quickly on the consumer. They can't handle it. They're just not going to do it. So you got, as a hobby store owner, you got to make margins somewhere else. McFarlane figures, Yu-Gi-Oh, selling team merchandise. These people are real bad. Most sports car collectors are real passionate about their teams. I know Packer fans, Bears fans, Raider fans, Dallas Cowboy fans, Los Angeles Laker fans, New York Yankee fans, Boston Red Sox fans, especially Chicago Cubs fans. There's tons of fans out there. They're very passionate about their team. They love jerseys. They love hats. They love shoes. They love pennants are a pretty good margin. Posters are a pretty good margin. Mugs, all that stuff is 50 to 100% usually. And it's usually not even that. Clocks on the wall, rugs, barbecues. We did all kinds of weird things at our store. We sold all kinds of weird stuff at our store. But to get to my plug, Sports Images, they're on 4777 Roberts Road in Columbus, Ohio. Shout out to Ohio, baby.
Ohio, yes.
Telephone 614-921-0535. Hit them up. The reason why I stopped by the booth and the reason why I talked to this gentleman named Richard was they had these big, huge, like 300, I think it was 360-point snap, one-touch loader, and I talked to him about it. He said for sure it would fit any fold-out card, and I actually talked to him. I know collectors have brought this up, and a collector, gosh, I wish I could remember. I don't know if my brother remembers. Somebody posted the other day about how to kind of, it was a really actually good way to kind of bootleg your own way to display a book card.
Can't remember.
I kind of liked.
Yeah, we'll find it.
I'll have to write that down
We'll find it.
But I liked how he did it because he displayed the book card folded out. And this one touch would have you fold the book card in half. And usually the middle of the book card is the best. So yeah. If you have it folded down, you can't even show your friends. You got to take it out of the thing. So. But I talked to him, and he said that UltraPro thought about it, and they definitely, I think, are working on it. But the logistics behind it and maybe making it sturdy enough and getting it at a price point that works.
Right.
And my guess, it's not really the price. It's more the manufacturing of it and getting it right and getting enough samples of book cards in from manufacturers, seeing how they're actually doing these cards. Because I think there's more variations than we think, and Topps really does a lot of them, and I think there's going to be more book cards. I know Upper Deck does them too, and I forget who was the Upper Deck might have even been the first one to do it, but I might be. I don't even know.
I don't know. Yeah, that's an interesting question.
I don't even know if Panini does them, but I can imagine if they don't, they're going to be doing them too. So we'll see what happens there. But I can imagine you're going to get one at some point that lays flat. And I'll be sure to email Richard, and you probably can't, and you can contact, we'll give me your telephone number. This is at Sports Images in Columbus, Ohio. You can give them a call. They're not a hobby store. They're not somebody that, if you're a Jobo collector, but if you have a wholesale license or if you're thinking about opening a business, give these people a call. They not only have Ultra Pro and Upper Deck and Tops and Panini boxes, but they've got cross-sale items that I had a 1,000-foot sports card store. About 150 square feet was devoted to cards, and 900 or 850 square feet was devoted to jerseys and hats and things that I could mark up 100%, and people would still walk out the door happy about. You can't sell a box of 2012 or 2011 Topps Baseball Series 1 for $150, that would be about 100% markup or close to that. You just can't do it. So you got to cross-sell things, and that's what this company helps you out.
So awesome. So we got Orange County Sports Cards in Anaheim, California, and we got Sports Images in Columbus, Ohio. Just one thing I want to shout out. We'll do this tomorrow. I want to tease this for tomorrow. This doesn't have to do with the summit, but it does have to do with sports. When I was in spring training, had the opportunity to meet Pablo Sandoval's girlfriend. Really kind of random story how I met her and then started talking to her on Twitter, and I've had some private message conversations with her, and her and Pablo have enjoyed kind of laughing at some of my tweets and some of my things that I've said to Pablo Sandoval's girlfriend. And we're huge San Francisco Giants fans. So and Pablo's one of our favorite players. I've been following Pablo Sandoval when he was in Double A, and he was hitting 350.
Yeah, if you've listened to this podcast, right, you would have known when he was batting 350 in Double A.
Right, and I was buying cards before he'd hit in the major, and before he was Kung Fu Panda, before anybody knew who he was. So his girlfriend is super cool, super hot.
Obviously.
You know, I was about to hit on her, and then all of a sudden I found out she's Pablo's girlfriend, so I was like, okay, well, yeah, that ends that conversation right there. But she's super cool. She's like, she's just out of the blue. Even today, she tweeted me today and unprompted and asked me how Vegas was going, so she's super cool. I'm going to be catching up with her maybe at some games in San Francisco. If she lives out in Arizona, but so I'll share all that story on the next podcast. I got some really interesting things I'll share with you guys.
We look forward to updates on Pablo's girlfriend. And my sick brag of the week, I've shook two celebrities' hands this week. Dennis Rodman, somebody that I really looked up to in his basketball career. Obviously, he had a short stint with the Lakers. Anybody that plays for the Lakers, I love. But I where I really fell in love with Dennis Rodman was on The Apprentice, and where he appeared to have a drinking problem. And I have a friend that I've known since college that had a drinking problem since then, and he still does. He's going through a tough time. I feel for those people because I know they have a big heart and they're very nice people, and it's not always their, it's not just because they want to drink every day that they have to. It is a disease. It is a problem. I hope that Dennis is better now. I hope that everything's going good for him. And he seemed to be doing real good. And he seemed to be, I mean, he shook my hand yesterday without even me extending my hand. I wanted to say that. And then Phil Hellmuth, poker players out there, people that love poker, especially on TV. I watched Phil Hellmuth, my brother and my roommate Nick here, watched Phil Hellmuth play poker for about 45, 50 minutes today in the Wynn Poker Classic at the beautiful Wynn Casino. I'm not just talking about the waitresses that bring you around.
Wow.
The drinks either, but that's pretty much what I'm talking about. Hopefully my girlfriend misses this episode. But Phil Hellmuth. Was
nicest guy ever.
Nicest guy. We watched him. I wanted to get his autograph, and if he's still in the tournament, I'll probably shoot for it tomorrow. But I hate to bother celebrities. I hate to bother people that, especially when he's in the middle of a $1 million guaranteed poker tournament. I hate to bother people when they got a lot of things going on. And he was standing, but I noticed he was on a 15-minute break. Goes into a cafe, to go get a bite to eat. I walk up to him, tap him on the shoulder, ask him if I could shake his hand. He looks me directly in the eye and says, of course you can, and wishes me luck when he's playing for $1 million. Classy guy. He takes a lot of heat on TV. He's the greatest thing ever. For a lot of people in poker think he's the worst. He's the greatest thing ever for poker. A lot of people out there think hobby shops, to finish our point up on sports cards, a lot of people out there think hobby shops are the worst. They could go by the wayside. It wouldn't mean anything. It's really totally the opposite. These people are intelligent people. They're nice people. They're doing their best to grow the hobby. And I think the more hobby shops there are out there and the more successful they can be, the more successful this hobby is going to be. And those 1,000 to 3,000 to however many cards you got in the closet. If you're like me, you got 5 cards, but it doesn't matter how many you got in there. The more popular this hobby is, the more people we can get into it, the more people we can keep in the hobby, the more valuable that stuff is going to be in the closet. Folks,
the more people you can trade with, the more people, everything. It just
the more money the companies can make, the better autographs, the better hits, the more products they can come out and make. It's really the manufacturers we want running at a 5% margin. We don't want the people at the end to make 5%. We want these manufacturers to run at 5%. But to run at 5%, they need to be
huge volume.
They need to be running huge volume, and it needs to be lots of collectors, lots of people buying cards. But there are lots of things out there that run on that kind of margin. I can imagine manufacturing cards and cars, and doing that and offering benefits is run at a very low margin, but their stock seems to be doing okay. I'll have to check the stock market this week to remind me of that. That's maybe what I'll do here. Grab a couple drinks. We're in Vegas. It's 9:30. It's time to go out, folks, and see what's going on. Again, hopefully my girlfriend, I love you, Annie. We'll talk to you later. We are out of here.